Hello.
Hey, Bill.
Hi. Who am I speaking with?
This is Lynn Jones.
Hey, Lynn. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
Thanks for connecting with me.
Yes. I'd had a hold count, and you prompted me to redo, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing to have.
Yes.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
As you develop your new, look forward to later on, you might develop your coaching practice, outside of what you're doing.
Correct.
It's a great way to connect with people. Anybody else on the call?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Dan Shea's online.
Hey, Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How's everybody?
Good. How's the view from the Empire State Building?
Today my view is from my basement. So it's it's not very enticing. I can see the top of my driveway.
Okay. Well, all right. So you're not at work today, huh?
No, my job has me kind of spread out with folks all over the country, and if I can coordinate a day like today where I'm all.
Hi, Susie. How are you?
Good. This is Bill.
Good. Are you in one place or are you driving?
I will never do that from a car again. That was too crazy. So, no, I am at my desk. Thank you for asking.
Oh, good. You betcha. Yeah, it's kind of hard to drive and coordinate. I've unfortunately tried it a few times. Not a good idea.
Oh, I wasn't even driving. My husband was driving, but it was not ideal, far from ideal, particularly when we hit the congestion from a major traffic accident. So.
Yeah. So, are you teaching at this point too? Are you over at John Hopkins?
Actually, this semester I took a pass, so I'm not teaching this semester.
Okay.
So. And this is my first semester in I don't know how long. It feels very unusual.
Well, yeah, sometimes you need a change, though, I think. Have you been doing it for quite a few years?
Yes, I think it's now about 17 or something.
Okay, so, long time.
Yeah, but...
Oh, go ahead.
So the other part is that the MBAOD program has been phased out. So I still teach the business communication and team building, those kinds of things, but my real heart and soul is in these straight OD courses. So that's kind of a way of saying it's time to gradually move out of that world and into your next.
Yeah, sure. I understand totally. Well, let's see. We have Dan and Lynn on the call. Anybody else has joined us at this point? Okay. We have a new person joining us today. I expect him any moment. His name is Mike Fitzsimmons, and I'll let him introduce himself. Let's see. We're missing a couple people here. Before we get started, Dan's at home today. Dan, do you do a lot of traveling?
I have periods of time where I bounce around quite a bit, so it all depends. But I'd say about a third of my time is traveling. Yes.
Yeah, you have. That company, that's a big company, that Swedish company. I looked it up. I don't remember the name at the moment, but I did look them up after we talked last time.
Yeah, it's Skanska.
Skanska, that's right. They're one of the largest out there, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a big player globally for construction and real estate services.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
Okay, I'll give it a couple more minutes. I'm surprised that I just got a text that this new fellow, Mike Fitzsimmons, has the call-in information. Let me just hold on a minute. Let me just check on that one.
Hey, Dan, it's Lynn. How are you?
Good, Lynn. How are you?
Good. I just got your LinkedIn request, so I'm about to push accept. I don't have a picture of mine like yours. I haven't put it in yet. But
yeah, no, I heard it.
Right
I connected.
You're looking right at it now.
Yep. I was going to say I connected with everybody else, and I had your name down wrong. So when I heard you and Bill talking about it, I went in and typed it up and got you. So,
well, you got me.
I got you.
Bill?
Yeah.
Can we get a list of everyone's names and emails?
Absolutely. In fact, let me just do this. I will send it to you. Yeah. Okay. And then let's see, we one other person. There's two. There should be two other people coming in here. I think I'm going to go ahead and get started. And if they come, fine. They know we're here. There you go. All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and go ahead. Just to review the last class, there were three things that stood out as far as I'm concerned. One was we talked a lot about coaching from the center, and that's being present, being authentic. Hello. What do we have with us?
It's Jen. So sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's no problem at all. We were just getting started, and we were talking about getting everybody a list of the email addresses of everyone in the group. There's one that I just got a contact that a fellow named Mike Fitzsimmons was supposed to join us, so he may pop in here any moment. But in the meantime, Jan, we're just going ahead now and just quickly reviewing. Last time we were together, we really talked about a few things. We talked about how the coaching from the center. We talked about, you know, and that's obviously being authentic and being present. We talked about co-creative coaching, and that is that both the coach and the client have a responsibility to be part of the relationship. And then the third point that I think is really important that we talked about was the importance of having a good sponsor inside of the company and making sure that you have clarification as to what that sponsor is looking to get out of the relationship, vis-a-vis the person you're coaching. And without that support and a true understanding of what the rules of engagement are, if you will, it can become a very difficult environment and can sabotage the whole thing. And, of course, we talked about listening. Listening is extremely important. For this week, I hope everyone had a chance to take a look at the syllabus and go through and start looking at your own practice. Everyone have a chance to kind of think about what your practice might look like within your organization? Have you pictured that? Let me ask. I'll start with you, Dan.
Yeah, I did actually give it some thought, and it was interesting because I wasn't thinking of this as my practice per se. I was thinking of it more as another service that I could provide to the folks in my company. But you know, the reality is I can build this mini internal practice within my organization that could then become something bigger and better at some point in time. So I view my practice to be initially bound to the organization that I'm working with, and in particular the business unit that I serve, which is the real estate development group. here in the U.S., just Stanska, but I could easily take my practice beyond that business unit since I'm in the one marketplace, New York City, and I'm in the Northeast region of the country where we have several operations going, that I can go into our civil business, I can go into our construction management business, and but it would all initially be focused on Skanska, the organization I work for.
Okay. But I think that, yeah, an internal practice within an organization or your organization is makes sense because it is a practice, and it you'll begin to develop that capability, so you have a certain kind of a way you do things, and it'll work in all the divisions. So that's a good way to look at it. There mm-hmm. in the homework, they mentioned that people should try to make a list of what skills they feel they have in terms of, your own talents and skill for coaching and where you need to make some improvements. I'm not going to ask you to go through that or anybody to go through that at the moment, but I think it's something anyone, have you had a chance to, I guess I'm still with you, Dan, for a moment. Have you had a chance mm-hmm. to kind of start to list that kind of thing out?
Yeah, I started to brainstorm what those things could be, and it's interesting because I think I've had many instances in the past where just as a natural part of my job is coaching involved. So I think there's skills that I already have experience with, but I need to further, kind of build upon those and strengthen those. And then there'd definitely be things, as I'm going through the readings and the different parts of this book, I'm certainly recognizing things that that I do that maybe, I didn't realize that I do that already. So I just need to fine tune it. Or there's things that's like, wow, I wish I would have known that during that conversation 3 months ago. It may have helped me.
Yeah.
And, some of those things are slowing down the pace, identifying what you are here to talk about, what's a successful outcome, basically the agenda, shutting up myself, just being quiet without looking like I want to be the resident expert and trying to solve everybody's problems, but letting them come to that point themselves. So there's a lot of things I think that I do that that I'm going to now be able to formalize into more of a process for myself.
Excellent. Well, again, I think an awful lot of what we're going to go through is basic common sense and also kind of fundamentals that we all know intuitively an awful lot of this already, but we just need to remind ourselves to get that awareness back. And I think that, that's good. I'm glad you've had a chance to do that. How about you, Susie? Have you had a chance to take a look at that in your own situation?
Yes, I can't say I finalized it, but have done a lot of noodling and made some notes. And one of the things that jumped out for me is I had never seen SMART goals defined as with the R being realistic or being risky instead of being realistic or having some other word to it. And that kind of changed my whole mental model as I was going through and saying, I know there needs to be a stretch, but looking at that risk factor. And so that was a good aha for me. And mm-hmm. just kind of really struggling around, how do I really want to envision myself doing this? Because I really want to do my coaching practice primarily virtually. So kind of wrapping my head around it.
When you say virtual, you're talking about by telephone, you're talking about by online, or what are you thinking?
Either by phone, by Skype, FaceTime, but yes, from a remote location, in other words.
Sure. And that's something that definitely is a style thing and also a convenience thing, because certainly an awful lot of coaching takes place, through the telephone or even a combination of online and you know, reviewing, you know, information, just a combination of phone and online, or in person. And I think that, obviously, if you can do it on the phone, you get a lot, you can reach a lot further without having to physically be present. I think it's a matter of style. I think some people are much more comfortable being physically present and others on the phone, or some can do both. It's interesting. Good input. And I'd like to come back to that maybe with some of the others at some point. Lynn, how about yourself? Oh, go ahead. Did you have more, Susie, you want to say?
Again, can I put in that there's a point I want to come back to, and that was part of last week's conversation, which for me was around the ethics of coaching and the issue of anonymity and confidentiality and some of the distinctions that I thought I heard in the middle of the traffic backup around the distinction between a coach and a consultant.
Yes. Yeah, and, well, I mean, from what we discussed at that time was effectively a coach, a consultant basically provides answers to people's questions, if you will, and if you put it a different way, a coach sort of questions people's answers. That's one way I've heard it. But you know, a consultant's an expert in some particular subject typically, whereas the coach really is trying to draw the expertise out of the client.
And that hit a button for me, because as an OD person, it's not about using my subject matter expertise. It's about process consulting. So, I mean, and so I make clear distinctions between what's a typical, let's say, an IT consultant or typical management consultant versus an OD consultant. You know, again, kind of very different feel, but the whole ethics piece of what you do or don't share with your client or the person signing your contract.
Yes. Well, again,
it's a conversation you and I probably have offline.
Yes, and please, and I'll put this out to any of you. If you have anything you'd like to call and talk to me about offline, I'm available. When we can set up a time or a date a date and a time. But yeah, it's very important that we remember our role to be a coach. We're not consultants. We're not therapists. And we're going to get into that a little bit more later on in our discussion. I'd like it to move. Now, Mike has not joined us, I don't believe. So perhaps he'll join us next time. I don't know. Jan, how about yourself? What you're thinking along the lines of the picture of your practice and some of your skill sets and things where you want to grow.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I am, like I said at the beginning, very glad to be able to have this time to sort of check in. It's a really great check-in terms of how I'm doing in my practice, and some of the exercises in the accelerator for established coaches, you know, have given me pause, and I'm glad to have the refresher time. Primarily, one of the things that I'm looking forward to, because we were looking at it, is over the last week, is the questions that can tend to get stale, which I really didn't think about that until I read that in the accelerator. And sure enough, I look forward to finding different ways to maybe the same place, but getting there faster for the client by offering some more powerful questions that I haven't thought of yet. So I really look forward to that, Bill.
Good. Okay. That kind of brings us back, and I hope all of you kind of have the accelerator where you can kind of take a look at it as we kind of talk about things, because I like to – I don't go back and read everything in the accelerator, and we do jump around a little bit just as the syllabus suggests. But there are things I'd like to hone in on, and I'll mention page numbers if that's helpful to people. if you have it online, for example. One of the things that occurred to me on page 13 was the importance of developing basically a growth mindset. They mentioned, again, you're a human capital coach, you're inside of an organization, you are working with a certain culture, you're part of that, and at the same time, you need to continually develop a growth mindset, and I think that what they're really talking about is really, there in that situation, is really understanding, the impact of the organization, the culture, and that type of thing, and your own approach and how that affects your approach. Anybody want to comment on that one?
Yes. Bill, this is Lynn. Yeah, that did strike me, especially since I'm kind of at the top of the food chain in my organization. And it really did make me reflect on, what I do sets the tone of my whole organization. And though I knew that, I really was able to kind of sit down and focus on that and use that as kind of a guide when I am interacting with my employees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Anyone else want to touch that one? Okay. Just to kind of relate back to what you said, Susie, and the distinctions between coaching, consulting, and therapy, there's just a quick reference on page 14 to the difference. And I think the comment there is that coaches do not need to know more than their clients. And it's about listening and responding to your client rather than advising or fixing them. Now, I find that to be difficult for me, particularly because I coach a lot of small businesses, people who are learning new things about how to move forward in their businesses. And I've been, heavily involved in large and small organizations for so many years that I have a hard time not trying to give advice. Anybody else have that problem?
Yes. This is Dan. I find, and again, it's through the readings now with this program, I'm adjusting how I think about this stuff, but I always feel like my role is to almost help people with their problem by sometimes just solving their problem for them. And it'll be much more powerful to me if I can manage to, resist that and sit back and let them come to the conclusion themselves. But I can't sit here and say that I know more than my clients, but with situations I deal with, I find that I have an experience that is very helpful to them, that I got to figure out a different way to get them to where they need to be.
Yeah, and sometimes go ahead. Any other comments on that one?
Bill, this is Lynn.
Yeah,
I have a specific situation in my office where I have a lot of employees retiring this year, and I have a lot of new supervisors. And, my problem has always been to go in and, solve the problems and what have you, but we're trying to make some major steps forward in the office, and this is kind of guiding me to allow them to utilize their own tools and knowledge and ideas to kind of get a fresh start as they're taking over the reins. I have like 13 departments and about 7 new supervisors, and so this has been very helpful.
Yeah. And obviously – you're a subject matter expert in your particular group or organization there, at the county. And I think that, you're looking at more than one role here. People are, if you're going to coach people It's about trying to draw the solutions from them and their, you know, information for them. If they don't have the basic information on how to do a job, and you do, personally, you know, you've got kind of a dual role there. I think to say at some point, do you want me to continue to coach you, or are you looking for me to be an advisor to you, and ask them, because that's a different thing. Does that make sense?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because you know, you've been in the county for many years, right? And so you're trying to, yeah. So, but the nice thing about what you're trying to do in learning to coach is to really get more ownership from the people that you're working with, that they, in fact, will take responsibility and accountability for owning their situation and what they want to get out of a particular session with you.
And I would imagine that, you know, by owning it, they have more of a skin in the game, I guess you could say, and will be more motivated in their daily duties because, you know, it's their baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like so many things. If they own it, they're going to do a lot better job, and they're going to they're not going to just come and always ask somebody such as yourself, how do I do this, how do I do that, which is a nice but non-thinking way of approaching things. If they own it, they have to think it through. They have to be more solution-oriented, and that's good. I think on page, I think it's 16, that one little chart about this being and doing thing, and this is exactly kind of along the lines we're talking about. If you're doing coaching or you're performing, then you're really you're trying to control everything, and that's not what we're trying to accomplish. It's the client's agenda that we are focused on, not our own. So again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier with Susie. You know, instead of trying to solve your client's problem, you need to draw the solutions from the client themselves. All very, very common sense, but not, you know, easy to talk about, but hard to do. I like the one about, go ahead.
I'm sorry, this is Susie, and you just hit for me my lifelong quest, and I'll still be asking this, you know, one of the last questions before I kick the final whatever, but that quest is, how do you manage the difference between knowledge and behavior? And so intellectually, it's always going to be that struggle, that how do I let somebody solve their own problems? You know, I think for me, I have that awareness that's the model, but there's, mm-hmm. I still constantly always have to do that reminder that I can't solve it for them. At a minimum, I can suggest, here's some references, and you read up a little bit, and we'll have a different conversation our next session. But that's, and for me, it's just always such a struggle. You know, it's humankind. If it wasn't that case, every nutritionist would be an ideal weight. And if you've ever gone to a nutrition conference, all nutritionists are not ideal weight. So just kind of putting it out there that I think we all need to give ourselves permission to understand that it may always be a struggle, at least for some of us.
Oh, I think it will be, particularly for people who are highly organized and you know, drivers, a little more controlling type people. And it's kind of, you know, do what I say, not what I do. And it's hard to keep that in mind. And I think that, again, it's easier if we aren't attached to the outcome of a situation. You can be a lot more objective and open-minded. And this is the biggest one of the biggest problems is attachment or non-attachment. You want to, you care, but you have to put limitations on your caring about the outcome. You want people to be successful that you're coaching, but they have to pick up, they have to do the heavy lifting. It's on their end, not so much our end. Any comments on that, Jan? What do you think? Have you?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge that most coaches, new coaches, experienced coaches have is releasing the urge or the tendency, because I think we're hardwired to want to help and give advice and that sort of thing. So it's I think what happens is you learn by doing, at least I did. And the more you self-observe and reflect on your coaching and how it's landing, the quicker you are to make some adjustments that are more helpful for the client.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, if you guys go to page 19, I'll tell you what I did with that page. I added a couple things to it, and I printed something for myself and have it nearby to remind me of what a coach's role is. I hope all of you can see that. Can any of you not see it? I could read part of it if you can't see it.
Did you say okay. Page 19?
Page 19, yeah, in the guide. I actually printed that out and I put it in big type because it helps me I've taken it with me before a session and to remind myself of what I'm there to do. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, though. I'm sorry. This is Jen. No,
Interrupt driven here. Go ahead. Go
okay,
for it.
Good. So there's one part of this, and I'm eager to talk about it with you and the others, that even when I teach this and when I do it, there's the third to the last point there, which says offering perspectives, options, and suggestions to raise awareness.
Yes.
And catalyze the client's own solutions. I think that is something that needs to be read and received very carefully, because when we say offering perspectives, options, and suggestions, I actually don't think coaching is really meant to offer suggestions. So I don't know. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on that in terms of how to interpret that.
I'd interpret that sort of about in the simple coaching model, kind of where you're suggesting finding the coachable moment, if you will.
Yep.
In other words, if you say to me certain things, I may say, well, it sounds like you you feel pretty strongly about that particular situation. And then you may talk more, and then it's mostly, to me, that's sort of like reinforcing what options there, you know, when it says catalyze their own solutions, it's almost back to the last part of the simple coaching model where you're framing the masterpiece with them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're kind of saying, okay, we've talked about three ways you can go thing, you know, you could go forward, which one seems to resonate with you the most. And those are options. And then when they say, well, I think this one, then you can kind of help anchor that a little bit, I guess. But I said something like your perspective might be, well, it sounds like you seem to be the most, that seems to resonate with you the most.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you'd like to go forward and do? And I'm just kind of taking that one. I didn't write it, but I mean, that's kind of the way I interpret it.
Yeah. Okay. So long as there are suggestions and options that come from the client.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
I definitely, otherwise you get back into the consulting piece or the advice piece.
You're
giving to the client. So I have to take this from the other end and put it, you know, turn it around and say, I'm just reinforcing or helping them anchor their own options and solution potentials or something. No.
Gotcha.
That's the way I look at it. And yeah, it could be written better.
okay.
So,
okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment? I changed a couple things at the end. I added two things. And I guess it's sort of a reinforcement of what started in the very top. But I said, I think the coach's role is helping motivate the client to take action and be an accountability partner for the client. Because that to me is, if you go through a coaching session and you don't come to, you don't always get there, but if you do get there, which hopefully you can do most of the time, is get them to a point where they, there's something they can do, and then you can help hold them accountable to do it. Anyway, I added also one more thing in parentheses at the very end of that set of things, and that is the client supplies the agenda and their desired takeaway for each session. So I think it's important, and I have a tendency to have a, and I find fault with myself here for this. If we were on a subject last time, I may start the session sometimes by saying, well, you know, last time we were talking about X, and then the client reacts to that, and I realize that all of a sudden I'm setting the agenda. did everybody get that one?
That's happened to me a lot.
Yeah, and so it's better to do everything you can to encourage the agenda and the client to support, to supply the agenda, and also always ask at the beginning of any session, what would you like to take away from this today? And that helps you and the client keep it on track. And then at the end, again, I think we talked about it last time, we call it the bookends. You start with that, and then you end with, did you get the takeaway that you were looking for? And it's risky because they may say no. I really didn't. Well, okay, you may want to go a little further in that session if you need to, but hopefully that those bookends are good way to know that there was an effective session. Anyone have an experience they could talk about for a minute where they got into a situation where they started to coach somebody, but they couldn't figure out? And we'll see that in our own practice, about where it doesn't go anywhere that you can really put your arms around.
Could you restate the question, please?
Yeah. Those who have tried to go, have done coaching sessions, had they been in a situation where they just could not seem to be able to complete the session to the satisfaction of a client?
This is Susie, and I have kind of an aha for me was I realized with my coaches, when the conversation would switch to the, oh, and how was your husband's surgery? I mean, it would start going in other directions. It was usually when I knew we're hitting a really crucial conversation piece, or the client, this is today, not getting what she wants, and so she's diverting. And so I kind of use that as a clue when the conversation shifts. It's and again, I never know whether it's because she's not getting what she wants or if it's getting too close to home.
It's hard to tell because sometimes you may walk away from a coaching session feeling like it was kind of a failure, and yet it turns out that the client got a lot out of it. And that's why I think it's so important to try to remember, if you remember, among other things, remember to try to ask at the beginning what they'd like to take away, and then at the end, were they able to take away from this conversation or discussion what they were looking for? And if not, then try to go down another path a little bit with them. Or if time runs out, say, well, you know, let's try to work on that a little bit more next time we get together, if that is the most important thing for you at that time. You know, something like that. It's just, you don't always win in these things. Coaching is,
Bill,
So
this is Dan. I just have a question for you, for, you know, for anybody that's got an ongoing practice. In my world, sometimes the coaching sessions or the coaching program that gets created is, you know, we go to an external coach to come in and work with a particular manager or executive in the company. And that's an ongoing process where there seems to be some continuity from week to week or session to session. As I sit here and I'm listening to everybody talk and going through the material, this almost comes out as these are very individual, one-off type of discussions that you're having with the person that you're coaching. And even at the beginning of this particular part of the conversation, you said, you know, you said you sometimes start off by recapping what happened in the session before, and that's probably a big no-no, because now you're setting the agenda, because maybe you're triggering in their mind, let's go back to that and spend a little bit more time. So I guess, is there opportunity for there to be ongoing topics that will continue for quite a while as opposed to a one-off session?
Yes, I think particularly if it's something that you have a accountability factor around. For example, and this is I'm coaching a person, and they said they needed to do a business development plan. And so we talked about what would make sense, and they said, I believe I can do a draft of that plan before our next session and review it with you at that time. Okay. So then the next session comes, and the subject for that particular session is to review the draft of the business development plan that they're trying to accomplish. And you listen, you ask a few questions. And so at the end of that, it may be, okay, now we're moving from the draft to the outline of the plan, from the outline of the plan to a draft of the actual plan. So that's their objective for the next session. So you can go that way. In business particularly, you may be coaching them regarding subjects they need to accomplish that are business-oriented. Like, for example, and this is something that when you're doing human capital coaching inside of organizations, you have to – part of what we talked about before is that assisting with setting goals, planning, and strategizing. So there's a consistency there, Dan. Does that help?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It sounds like you can have a more of a larger scale topic that can then be broken up into pieces.
Yeah, and I think, again, though, it is their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get it started with their agenda, and then you can have a large agenda topic that may take several sessions to kind of what I call unpack or vet out with someone.
Right.
And that's a little bit different than sometimes personal coaching, although personal coaching or life coaching, and Jan's the expert, I'm not, but it gets a little bit more back into, it's very close. You have to be really careful because you get close to therapy, but not so much. They still have goals, objectives, and that type of thing. Maybe Jan, you could comment on the differences. I don't know.
Between helping them in something that might seem more therapeutic, you mean, Bill?
Right. Well, I guess my question would be we just discussed a business coaching situation where there might be a large topic like doing a business development plan or
right,
putting together your strategies and so forth, that would there be a continuation of that discussion throughout several sessions?
Yeah.
What do you see in life coaching?
Yeah, oh, I think there's absolutely a continuation, and it's not safe to assume that we can help a client get through whatever it is they're wanting to work on in one session. And that's primarily because there is so much depth. I mean, if we allow there to be, there's so much depth to explore in a particular session. It's not just surface stuff like logistical, tactical strategies, but the
yeah.
depth, you know, sometimes you have to go deep, and then they have to sit with that, and then maybe they work on that, and then there's an accountability piece that is followed, you know, up. I mean, you know, things obviously is different in business where maybe you're working more do you know what I mean? You guys, like strategy,
yep.
you know, logistical stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there's always room for that, you know, what's going on underneath that might help us.
Oh, I agree. And I think, by the way, it can become quite personal in a business
yeah.
situation, you know. What's, you know, for example, if they have an issue with another employee or their boss or someone else,
mm-hmm.
And they are afraid to take action, you know, questions such as, you know, what's keeping you from taking that action?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, how are you feeling right now
yep.
as you think about this?
Yep.
Those
yep.
are deep, yeah, and that works. One of the things that I use sometimes with a client is when I hear something and it doesn't ring as a thank or as complete as it should be, I will just straight ask them a question like, what are you not telling me? Then I shut up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful question.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, asking powerful questions, but to me, when you say to somebody and they've defined something for you, and you feel this sense that they're not being forthcoming, don't be afraid to ask questions like that. Because if you're not, if you're not going to help them if you, you know, sugarcoat things too much, that gets back to authenticity. And there's a great book, if you ever want to read it, called Fierce Conversations. And it's not about conversations that are, you know, that are overly aggressive, but they're very, it's really a good book. It's about really to have good, robust conversations with people and to get, overcome, you know, a lot of barriers to communications. And how to handle emotions on both sides of the table, you know. So it's called Fierce Conversations.
You may also want to think about Peter Block's Flawless Consulting, because it's all framed around being authentic, but he also gives a lot of suggestions for how you handle the conversation when you're meeting resistance from your client.
Is Peter Block?
Yes.
Okay, and this one is Susan Scott. Here's Conversations. Okay, moving on. Talk a few minutes about when to stop coaching the client. And on page 26, we talk about some of these things. And one of the things, and I'd like to get some feedback from other people, is a list of a few things here. You don't respect the client. You find it draining to coach the client. They're telling you what you want to hear instead of the truth. Anybody have any feedback on that one? I know, Lynn, this, you're new to this, I guess. Have you done any coaching before, or is this kind of your first book?
I'm brand new to this. I have been researching it a little bit with interest, but this is my first step.
Okay. And I think the others have done some or a lot. Okay. So fair game. Dan, from your perspective, from a coaching perspective, how have you looked at yourself as an internal coach over time? Have you done that, or I'm not sure just where you are in the evolution of the coaching?
Yeah, no, I think I'm, again, because of my role in the company, I think I've had opportunity to be a coach without really realizing what that means. But identifying up front, is this, as we said earlier in this call, is it a coaching situation or is it an advising situation? And sometimes in the situations I get myself in, people are looking for advice, people are looking for guidance. And, you know, it's interesting. I've now, just over the, you know, in the last week, I've had an opportunity where I sat back and took some of this and put it into practice and more aware of what I was doing. But some of those things I've done in the past, some of them I totally butchered and screwed up now that I'm learning a little bit more about it. So I think I'm a novice at it still, but I have the benefit of touching on some or having some opportunities to do some of these type of coaching situations.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good. I mean, I think it's, I think I would move a little to the other two ladies regarding where they might have found a situation where just it was time to, I won't say fire the client, even though that's what they say in the guide, but a situation where you realize that it's just, there's no more value in the conversation. Any, Jan or, you know, Susie, any thoughts on that one?
This is Susie. I can think of a client that I felt we were getting nowhere, and I was at the point of terminating it. And again, it was just no progress being made. And as I was getting ready to terminate it, the client said, "Oh, by the way, I'm going on a 3-month sabbatical." And I was like, what a relief, was my thought. And when she came back, we were able to pick it up more productively. But I think if we would have kept going, one of us would have had to say enough is enough. It was stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was a natural opportunity for a break. That was good.
Yeah, and I didn't have to make it, so it was a great cop-out. So.
Excellent. How about you, Jan? Anything on anyone you can think of? Because sharing experiences is a big part of this, what we're doing today, and I will do continuously in this, because that's what makes this kind of thing live, is people's personal experiences if they want to put them forward.
Sure. Yeah, I find that if I look at my calendar and I see 11 o'clock, Bob Jones, whatever, and I, like, kind of wince, or I, you know, like, roll my eyes or, like, oh, or I gasp, something like that. If I have, like, a visceral reaction to seeing that client on my calendar, it's probably time to either address that, like, internally with myself or to bring it up to him or her even better, right, and say, okay, so what is it that's making me feel less than motivated to be on the line with this person, and what role do I have, and maybe what role are they playing in that feeling. So that, or there may be a time where your client and you are going around in circles, just circles, and you seem to be doing this, they seem to be bringing the same agenda, and you're talking about the same things. And one time that happened, I distinctly remember the person had ADHD, and I didn't know it. Anytime that happens now, I'm like, okay, are they ADD or what? You know, like, so I check in, you know, that. But for the most part, if they're just being, you know, unresponsive or uncoachable, you know, you check in and you coach them around that uncoachability or unresponsiveness. So there's definitely opportunities.
Yeah, that's good.
I have a question, just to Jen, real quick, with your own situation. Now, these clients that are coming to you for your practice because they want to, you know, be coached by you, or is this something that's arranged by somebody else in their world, whether it's a company, a supervisor, or something of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Both of them. Okay. And I've had both things happen where It's an internal, you know, and I'm coaching them. I'm not the internal coach, but someone from the company has hired me to coach them, and that is one of the toughest ones. As we were saying last week, it's because they're not fully vested, you know, in the coaching process. They're bosses, and so it's kind of a difficult dance sometimes to get to find that motivation.
Right, I bring it up because in my organization, I find that coaching now has become a easy development recommendation for somebody where it's not, there's no buy-in from the employee who has to go sit with a coach or work with a coach.
Yeah.
And there's no clarity, from the company to the coach with, you know, what's like everything we're talking about here. What are we looking at? What's a successful outcome? What are we trying to achieve with this? So I was just curious. I would imagine if somebody came to you, if I personally contacted you and wanted to work with you because I seek this better place that I want to be at.
Yeah, very different.
Shame on me if I'm the one who's like always late to a session, don't come prepared, and just expect you to wave your magic wand and make me perfect.
Although that does happen. I think this is Dan, right? Yeah, that does happen.
Yes.
But more so on the corporate side, yeah.
An experience I've encountered on the corporate side was having somebody who really wanted to be coached because he had looked around and it said everybody else that's kind of getting somewhere has a coach, and I haven't been assigned a coach, so I must not be on the fast track, and had no real interest in being coached, just wanted the status of having a coach.
Huh.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I think that when I've been in a situation where I've been asked to coach somebody, I will tell the sponsor that I'll have a conversation with the person that I've been asked to coach. And if I feel like they don't want to be coached, then it's not going to be productive. And I need to understand that they do want to be coached and that there's a good chemistry between myself and the client. And in other words, it's kind of a tough thing, because if you're asked by a sponsor to go coach somebody else, if we can't get that creative relationship going, it really is painful. It's really, it just is hard to show success, and then pretty soon the sponsor gets upset with you as the coach because you're not making any progress.
Well, Bill and Jen, this is Lynn. My question on this is, especially to you, Jen, you know, you were saying that, you know, there are times there's clients that are very challenging and kind of make you apprehensive about starting the session. Would there be a time that, you know, you basically come clean and be honest with that client, saying, you know, you're not doing your part, and you know you're causing conflict on my end. I'm troubled about coaching you, and maybe that would ring a bell and lighten them to maybe engage. So, because I'm new, I really don't know if that would be kosher or not.
Bill?
I think I think it's authentic, it's honest. I think that there's an internal coach in some ways has an advantage over an external coach, in that the internal coach may be in a situation where they can analyze somebody and go back to the sponsor and say, you know, I just don't feel that person has any interest in being coached, and you know, they may not be. People are either, you know, green and growing or ripe and rotten sometimes when it comes to, you know, their interest in their jobs and their careers. Whereas an external coach has a problem sometimes because they're getting paid specifically for, you know, the number of hours or sessions that they may be providing to the company, and therefore there are cases where external coaches become rather unauthentic because they're just milking, you know, the situation as opposed to calling it quits when they should.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yes. Yes, it does.
You be careful about that.
Yeah.
That's why if I'm a sponsor and I've got an external coach working in my organization, I'm gonna be checking on that. I'm not going to let it go too long. In fact, I was coaching a fellow for a lady who had a software company. I'm still coaching a guy. And she said to me before the activities, she said, you know, I've got a guy in charge of my sales organization, and I'd like you to coach him. Hopefully he'll, you know, he's doing a pretty good job, but I want to continue to help him grow. So I started coaching him, and we got more into what I call values and life goals and his goals in addition to his business goals, which was fine. And so we were going along that track, and then I got a note from her that said, I just thought I'd see how you were doing because I asked my sales manager, you know, if you guys had really put together, you know, a real plan for next year for his sales plan and so forth and so on. And he said, well, no, we've been more involved with, you know, larger goals and goals, you know, beyond, you know, just that. And she came back at me and she said, you know, remember the company's paying you to help him develop his plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it became more clear to me, right? So I said, thanks, I'll make sure we do that. And so we took a little different direction because I realized I wasn't satisfying the sponsor. He was getting a great deal out of it. He told me he really loved the sessions and all of that. And so I basically then came back and said to him, she needs a tangible plan for you to develop for next year. And could you have something that she could review with you by the end of November or whatever, end of October? And he said, fine. So then we started moving toward, you know, him outlining the plan and working that way. So I got a little off track. And I hope I'm making sense, but you can see how you can go down the wrong, you can go down a line that's really valuable to the client, but not so valuable to the sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill, that makes a lot of sense. This is Jen. And that's why having gotten into so many, and maybe this is Susie can also speak to experience of this, having gotten into those scenarios one too many times, I now go to the sponsor and at the very beginning and say, I understand that you have a set of goals, and I also understand that you want a coach to come in and support that those goals being met. So something else that you might not expect is that in order for those goals to be met, a coach, and in like true coaching form and philosophy, it'll be required and almost necessary to look at some things that are outside or, as you say, bigger or broader or more personal, right, in order to help that client, I mean, you know, that client really reach those goals that the sponsor wants. There's stuff that needs to be dug up. I mean, because if the client didn't have stuff to be dug up, they would be meeting the goals. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of sponsors like to put Band-Aids on and just be like, just sit down and do a plan, you know? But really, it's like, well, okay, let's just talk about, like, what's going on. Like, what's really going on? Like, I got your back here. Let's talk about that for a second. And then we can come back on the surface and have some conversation about, you know, motivating you to get a plan together. So I like to tell the sponsor up front that we might be talking about, you know, I don't know, their marriage or their divorce or their weight or, you know what I mean? Because, like, these are the things that are keeping them from being at their highest potential at the job. And I think that's important that they know that.
Yeah,
and I
got to go ahead.
I was going to say, this is Dan. I was going to say, Jen, I got to imagine those are things that you make very clear to the sponsor that these aren't things that I can share with you.
Yeah. There's that too. There's that too. So I learned that it's important, one, to tell the sponsor, this is going to happen. So, like, don't get on my jock about, you know, oh, well, we're supposed to do the plan. You know, like, yeah, I know that we got the plan in the horizon, but I can't get the plan and have it stick for you unless we're addressing these underlying issues, right? That's one piece. And then the other is, oh, and by the way, whatever is, you know, told is told within strict confidence, you know.
Yeah, and
I give general. Yeah, Bill, you might want to talk to that, like how you handle confidentiality.
I mentioned a little bit last time, but before I get there, I'll just go back and say with this person I was coaching for this lady who was running this company, I actually uncovered some things with him that were very important along the lines of the fact that he had some. He'd come in from a larger company, and he felt that he knew some things, and he was pushing the company in directions quicker than what they're used to going, and he was getting resentment from other peers in other groups in the company, and he also felt that she, being his boss, was inhibiting his ability to go certain directions. So we had to kind of talk that one through, which is over and above, and he was a little hard-edged, so we kind of talked about, you know, developing some of the softer skills of being a little more slowing down and listening to the opinions of other people and other employees, and because he was kind of a driver. So we had to work on some of that before we kind of got back to, you know, making the plan. So she didn't really understand, or nor did I want to get into that in too much detail with her, because that did reach what I considered the confidentiality of my relationship with him. So, yeah, I mean, again, when you and you are absolutely right, Jen, you need to set up the expect. Everything in life with dealing with anyone is all about setting expectations.
If you don't
set expectations for everything, I mean, literally with anyone, I mean, when you go in with a sponsor, you talk about the fact that there will be some, in order for me to develop a trust relationship with the client, we're going to be talking about some personal things which really have to stay there, and I'm not going to bring them back to you because that's not my job. Mm-hmm. It's not my job to go out and find out what's bothering this person from a personal perspective and then run it back to you. My job is really to help that person kind of work through that and then become more productive and achieve the goals of the company. Does that make sense? Clarification up front.
Yep.
With the sponsor and with the client. And that's getting back to, you know, I won't take a lot more time on on some of it, but on around page 73 or 4, we talk about, and again, we talked about earlier the kinds of questions. There's five different kinds of questions. I think the key thing is, and it doesn't say that here, but ask questions. Make sure you're asking questions that you're using, you know, what I call what questions rather than why questions. You know, what, when, how, take stuff. Why questions tend to put people on the defensive. Example, if I say, what are you feeling right now? You may say, I'm not feeling so good. Or, you know, I'm feeling okay. That's a what question. If I say to you, you look kind of down, why do you feel that way? Then you're going to feel defensive. So why questions are dangerous. So if you notice, when you look at the questions, five types of questions here, there's a lot of what and when and how type questions. Those are fair game. Anybody want to comment on that?
I've always heard you can use a why question if it's about a process. But to ask a why question of a person, I agree with you. It creates defensiveness.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. If I say something like, if there's a process that failed, you might say, why do you think it failed? Might be okay. Or you could say, how do you think it failed? Either way. So enough said on that one. The client's agenda, I think on like 137, 136, there's some comments about that. I just want to touch on that for a minute. And then I want to spend the rest of our time getting back into the simple coaching model, because we're going to start using that next week, and you'll be doing that, and I'll explain that in a minute. Get up to what page I mentioned. Was 136, I think it is. Give her away a minute to get there. Everybody up there yet?
Yes. You said 136?
136, yeah. It's just something, again, to go back and remember that it's the client's agenda. And I think the key thing is where you're going to fall down here, and this is something you really need to make clear with the client initially, is they need to bring an agenda. Because if they don't bring an agenda, then, you know, then they have to think about, well, what is important to me today, or what's really, and they may come up with something that just to kind of humor you. So on page 136, there's that part about if they're not bringing a well-formed agenda, if they're showing up late, they're not fully engaged, they want you to solve their problems, they don't tell the truth in terms of, you know, what you think it is, you really need to go back and review with them what their role is versus your role to get something out of it, you know, for them to get the out of this what you need, what they need. I want to make a point about the blank canvas. Anybody want to take a shot at what it means to be a blank canvas? You the coach. If you're a blank canvas.
This is Dan. From what I read and what I would think of the blank canvas is you've basically cleared all the noise from your head and what you have going on, and you're focused solely on what's happening right there with your client and what their situation or their issue is that you are there to talk about.
Absolutely, and that's so important, because one of the things that I try to do is, and we're all busy people in many ways. I mean, everyone thinks they're busy in some ways or another, but if you don't take a little time to kind of center yourself before the session, then you're going to still have some agenda running through your head when you get there. And clearing your head and taking a moment for yourself, whether it's to meditate for a couple minutes or making sure you're there early, all those things are so important for you to ground yourself before the session starts. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I find that for me, especially in the beginning, it was really helpful to clear. I do phone coaching, so I found to be blank personally and energetically, it was helpful to create a blank space in my environment. And so I would make sure to turn off my computer screen, clear my desk, and just sort of get centered on only that, because there's so many things going on. It's hard to leave behind, right, what you were just doing to sort of change gears and get blank. So sometimes just a change of in your environment can help you energetically become blank. Or whatever works, like breathing, or some people light a candle, or sing, I don't know, listen to a song. I don't know, a lot of things people do. you just have to try things to see what works for you.
Yeah, it's so important because, you know, if you're full of yourself or your own thoughts, and you certainly, we've all experienced the other side of that when you're talking with someone who you know is somewhere else, they're not there for you because they're thinking about other things and you're sitting in, or you may be talking to them on the phone or even sitting in front of them, and you realize that they're not there. So to be a blank canvas doesn't mean not to be there. It means to objectively say, okay, I'm truly present. I'm really going to hang on the first words out of that client's mouth. I'm really going to hear what the situation is. And that brings us to the other piece for today, and that is to focus a little bit more on the first of the four-step simple coaching model, and that's clarifying the agenda. So we're really talking about the front end of the session right now. We talked about it last time. Anybody want to comment on what they, how would they start? Because you're going to start this next week anyway. How do you set the stage for clarifying the agenda? I'll leave you the last, Jen, because you know the model more than maybe use it more than the other. How about what do you think on that one, Lynn?
And you're talking about the initial setting the stage?
Yep.
For your coaching?
Yeah. I'm talking about, in the simple coaching model, they have four parts. The first part is clarifying the agenda at the beginning of the session. What do you see that? Why would we need to do that?
Well, because you need to have a direction for the agenda. To move towards, and that would be, as you stated earlier, up to the client to come prepared with that particular, you can ask the question, but the client has to be prepared to give you the answer of what to work on.
Okay. So if you were in position to start that session after you welcome the client, say, hi, how you doing today? They may bring it out right then and there. Say, well, I'm not doing very well, and here's my problem. You know, they may just show right at you. Or
I would,
they may stand fine.
Hey, Bill, this is Dan.
Yeah.
If I could jump in, I would imagine that setting the stage, I always kind of look at it as you've got one opportunity to get the relationship and what this is going to become off on the right foot. So I got to imagine there's some level of setting expectations, of talking about, what they can expect from you as a coach, what you should in turn expect from them as a client. And just, almost setting those kind of, having that discussion up front, so that it all can be addressed. So everybody, almost like calibrating the mindset, for the person. And then you now have set the stage that you can take, you can move forward.
Good point. Any comments, Susie, on that one? At the very beginning of this, some of your sessions?
Well, the very beginning session, I tend to do not only what do you want out of this session, but I want to hear what the person's long-term goals are. Because for me, a session is a real short term. So maybe I'm thinking of a session not incorrectly. I'm thinking of that as an individual meeting. But I want to hear what do you want out of today, our initial meeting. And what are your long-term goals for working with a coach. And if they don't have it, come back and revisit. You know, if you want to take a few minutes to think about it, you know, can we revisit that at the end? And this is a real stupid thing. It sort of relates back to what Jen was just talking about. If I'm doing this by phone, I also ask, is it okay if I make notes? Because that's one of the things. I'm a real visual kinesthetic learner. And if I'm making notes, I find that I listen so much more closely than if I'm just kind of staring into space. So, I mean, that's part of kind of what I initially do. But I'm open to learning, what could I be doing better?
Yeah, no, that's a good one, the notes thing particularly. But I'm thinking also there may be things you may say when you're first meeting with a client. Like, I probably wouldn't ask the client more than, you know, every time I sat down with them, you know, what are your long-term goals? I might initially, but for a particular session that might be, say, 30 to 60 minutes, typically, I would want to be sure I understand the specific topic that they want to explore in this session, and not get too far. I mean, does it make sense, Susie, that I wouldn't ask them about their long-term goals, you know, every time I sat down with them for a session, right?
Right.
Unless I'm relating back to some piece, maybe.
I would only do that on the initial, and it's not all your long-term goals, but what's your long-term goal for coaching?
I get it, yeah. Definitely, on the initial, so you're saying the first time you're with a client.
Yeah, the very first time.
That would make total sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What do you want to get out of this relationship, typically?
Perfect.
The way
and I
agree with you. Long-term goals, because that kind of gets me in a more comfortable way of their saying, here's really what I want to achieve. And I try to use the term relationship as much as I can, because, again, I think coaching is more about relationship than content.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. And I think I was probably stepping down into a specific, you know, now that it's not the first time, but now we're in a what we're going to do today kind of thing. And I think if you go back and look at you know, the supplement number 5, it's very important. Those 3 things are really important. Specifically, what do they want to explore today? And then when it says any important details, I the way I would ask that one is, so what has happened or what have you done to date regarding that topic? And that way you start to get, you know, these open-ended questions, so you really understand what the topic is, and then also, of course, what they want to take away from the session. So all 3, as it says in the number 5 there, it says, you know, they need to be crystal clear. So when we practice, which I'm going to ask for some volunteers for next week now, the simple coaching model, we'll be listening for those, for whoever's the coach, to make sure that they cover those, that those 3 things are not only crystal clear to them, but if we as listeners don't feel that it's crystal clear, then it'll be something we can kind of, you know, through constructive feedback, talk about. So, what I'd like to do, we talked last week about the 4 pieces of the model. It's about 25 after the hour. I'll start with, we're all going to do this at least a couple of times over the period of time. I really need 3 people. Ideally, I need someone to say next week, I'll be the coach. Someone else, I'll be the client, and then I'd like a 3rd person to be the observer.
Bill, this is Lynn.
Next
week will probably be the only time I have to miss this meeting. I have a board meeting in New Orleans next week, and I won't be able to attend next week's meeting. And my question is, though, are recordings of the sessions available?
Yes.
Okay.
If you go to the class page, these are recorded.
Okay.
And I need to check to make sure they are, but I understand that they are, the way they set it up in Coach Training Alliance. But I have not gone back to listen to see, make sure that they're supposed to be recorded. And Holly was making sure that was in place. So I'll like I say, trust but verify. I will verify.
Okay.
So that makes it easy. Then there's three roles here, so the other three on the call could each take one of these and take whichever one you would like at this time, because then we'll start to say, okay, because I'm going to keep track of who's done what. Who would like to coach next time?
Well, this is Dan. I'll jump in and be the coach.
All right, great. And who would like to be the client?
Nope, nobody wants to be coached by Dan?
Yeah, they'll all get coached.
I don't blame you.
If I have an agenda, it's not that. It's I'm wondering what agenda are we? What are the guidelines? What guidelines do you want us to keep, Bill, for bringing an agenda? And what type of agenda? Like, do you want it to be something that would be realistic inside a company?
No, I'd like it to be real.
Yeah, right, of course.
I want it to be I want it to be something that's bothering the client.
Yeah.
Whoever you are. And you know, we all are wonderful, but you know, we all have things that bother us.
Sure.
So bring something you'd like to kind of process, you know, you'd like to work through. And again, the group norms here, the first one is trust. And, you know, we call it the Las Vegas rule, right? But what's said here stays here. And in my last session, I had a person who was working for a government agency who had been demoted and felt that she had had an assignment that was well below her capabilities. And she was struggling with staying in that particular agency or trying to apply for a job in a different agency or just plain quit and go out on private practice. And this is real to her because she was struggling with it. And so we worked, you know, that was the topic that we talked about, and she brought that back more than once. So, you know, it's up to you. You may feel the first time out or two you don't want to do that, then take a situation that you're aware of, whatever you're comfortable with. As the client.
This is Susie.
If you want to bring a third-party experience, I'm okay with it. If you want to bring your own experience, we're okay with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who wants to be the client?
Hey, everyone, I just also wanted to say, don't jump in, this is Susie. I'm on vacation next week, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to join the conference call or not, but it sounds like we're down to three people. So we definitely need someone. So I will make an effort to make sure I can join the call, but I'd prefer to do it as an observer.
Okay, that'd be fine. I totally understand. And I guess, Ken, you could be the client. That's a reversal for you. You get to be the other side of the coin.
Okay, good.
Well, thanks for working that out for next week, because it's something that, you know, depending upon the time, we might even do two of them and switch it back a little bit. So everybody think about a topic. And our time's run out. Did you any comments, plus minus, on today's session? What you liked, what you thought we should do better?
No, I thought everything was great.
Yep.
Bill, where is the class page where the recordings are? Is that on the main website?
No. You should have had when I sent the welcome letter to you, the email, it was in there. But if you don't have that anymore.
I have that email. I saved it. So.
Okay, but if you drop me a note if you don't find that email, and I'll send it to you again.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's time, and thank you all very much. And
thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.